Hey, it's Monday morning, and for many of us, it's a holiday Monday morning. It's not a holiday Monday for me and you, Jules, is it?
No, it's not. Although, did you have a lot of chocolate for Easter? Was your weekend okay?
I did not have a lot of chocolate for Easter. As you know, here in England, they have this thing called Cadbury's, which isn't real chocolate. It's some kind of weird thing, but fortunately,
I
planned ahead of time. I got some fine Swiss and Italian chocolate to deal with. So we were
same
okay
here.
In that department.
Same here.
We're going to launch into it. I know you were dying to see my artifact of the day.
Yes, please.
It's another little figurine. And can you name this handsome beast of a footballer?
Oh, it looks a bit like Wesley Schneider, a little bit, but it's Jaap Stam, isn't it?
That's right. Well done with the Oranje shirt there. Hope Holland, by the way. And yes, it is Jaap Stam. And honestly, I realize I have more of these than I thought. They all freaking look the same. I think whoever made these, it's like they have like two, like, or they have like three bone structures for the faces. And then, you know, they might, depending on complexion, they might be.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's pretty hideous that people actually paid money for this nonsense back
then. You know, we have a lot. My sons have a lot. Next week on Thursday, I'll bring you a couple.
Your sons have a lot? Well, but your sons are little.
The
this
current
is like
players,
from the 90s, man.
Yeah, but they still do them now.
People still buy these.
It's called Soccer Stars. They make all sorts. They're pretty good. I mean, obviously your players, because you're so old, are like Jaap Stam, you know, from 25 years ago.
Hey, he's the manager of FC Cincinnati, huh?
Yeah, he's
been linked
with Cincinnati.
Really? So they keep making these. Okay, so Soccer Stars, if you're listening, please send us some. And then Jaap Stam and Darren Anderton won't be as lonely. Right. We're excited because we have Jan Åge Fjørtoft back from his Norwegian retreat. He'll be joining us on the show to talk to us about the Bundesliga and what's going on. And we'll have the G team, of course. You hyped? Alphabet 11?
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's a good one. It was better than I thought it would be.
We may even have three women's 11s this time around.
Yes.
All right, stay tuned. I just got a text from the legendary Sophie Lawson. And then, of course, quick hits. But we're going to start at the top with the Premier League. This pay cut thing rumbles on. And, okay, so for those who don't know about the way the news cycle works here in England, basically something happens, there's an announcement made, people react, and then people pick up phones, and they give you all this behind-the-scenes stuff. So this weekend was when we had access to a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff about the conference call. This is the famous conference call where you had a bunch of managers and players on and club officials, the one where they tried to get the players to take the, you know, wage deferral, wage cut package of up to 30%.
Yeah.
What's really funny is, apparently, according to the report in the Sunday Times, they had more than 50 people on the call, and this audio quality was absolutely terrible. I spoke to one person who was on the call, and he said that he really had no idea what they were saying. And in fact, he was WhatsApping somebody else. He was like, hey, what did he just say? Oh, what? What? No, I have no idea. Like, well, what do you think he said? But also the conference call, and this is something you shouldn't do, supposedly Bill Bush, who's a guy from the Premier League, and Bill, if this isn't true, he's a good guy. If this isn't true, why don't you come on our show and tell us it's not true? But he gave a 40-minute presentation. Now, bear in mind, Pep Guardiola and Jose Mourinho were supposedly on this conference call. Can you imagine those guys sitting there with a crappy conference call audio line listening to somebody talk for 40 minutes? I just find that extraordinary.
This is the Premier League. This is supposed to be the best league in the world, the most powerful, the richest. And you can't even get a call conference right. You can't even get a sound right. You can't even get your league sorted. I mean, everywhere in Europe, in France, in Italy, in Germany, as we will discuss with Jan, you've got a structure. People are talking. You've got realistic options put on the table. And people talk on the record as well. You've got the head of the league coming up, or the head of the federation saying, okay, this is what we've discussed. This is where we are at. We're going to talk with the government. In England, no one talks. It's a complete mess. You've got no better idea apart from, oh yeah, let's have a mini World Cup in the Midlands somewhere without even thinking about the consequences and the logistics and all of that. What's that mess?
I mean, the other thing is, who thinks it's a good idea to have a presentation, to have a guy give a presentation over the phone for 40 minutes? Exactly. Like, if you're gonna do this, and look, obviously the Premier League need to lay out their finances. Again, it was this thing where they're gonna lose 1.1 billion if they don't start playing again, whatever. But freaking have the guy make a PowerPoint presentation, make a little video of him talking, and send it to everybody.
Exactly.
And then turn the discussion afterwards into a Q&A, right? Surely that's a much more realistic way of doing it. Also, unless they wanted to, don't make Pep and Mourinho be on the call. I mean, especially when they weren't allowed to talk. Yeah, they're just sitting there listening. What?
And well, they couldn't probably hear. They couldn't listen even because the sound was so rubbish. So it's just, I mean, the lack of common sense, I find it baffling. And we're not saying it's easy here, you know, because the situation is so incredible. It's not. We're not saying it's easy and we're not blaming anyone. It's just that others seems to have a much better organization and structure than the Premier League.
I mean, look, when Richard Scudamore was in charge, and I know it's hard to make the comparisons between the two, but the Premier League was just such a powerhouse. They always spoke with one voice, even when maybe behind the scenes they were all disagreeing with each other. I think it's obviously easier to be united when things are going great, and Scudamore never had to deal with a crisis like this. But here's what I don't get. Do you remember when they announced Scudamore's golden farewell, they gave him this enormous bonus, and then they kind of said, oh, but he'll still be a consultant to the Premier League for 3 years. Well, if that's the case, he's still on your payroll. How about you bring him in to negotiate some of these deals? So maybe that is what they're doing, and they have they don't tell us anything, right?
No,
but
exactly.
I feel a lot more comfortable with this guy who's got all the personal relationships, right?
Yeah.
And who can maybe go and get this done.
I agree with you.
There seems to be disagreement also on the actual financial impact here, what clubs want to do. One of the things you mentioned about the communications, there's a story in the Daily Mail this morning which basically tells people that the Premier League have asked the broadcasters, Sky and BT Sport here in England, you know, they're rights holders, so they have access. I think it's a manager every 4 weeks and players every 2 weeks. Basically, Premier League's basically told them, look, don't talk about – there's a bunch of subjects which are off limits. Don't talk about whether you should void the season. Don't talk about whether about furloughs, salary cuts. Don't talk about the implications of Liverpool attempting to win their first title in 30 years. Don't talk about games behind closed doors. And it says, we should avoid, quote-unquote, news interviews as much as possible, as clubs are extremely nervous about putting anyone up. So we have to stick to these processes. How do you feel about this? I mean,
are we back in like the USSR 30 years ago where, like, you know, everything was just controlled and you could not say anything you wanted? If club put someone forward, they always brief players and managers anyway. They say, okay, this is going to – Gab Markoti is a lovely guy, but he's going to ask you about what do you think about avoiding the season. What do you think about if Liverpool don't win the title? So just be ready and answer whatever you want to answer. Don't make an earthquake in what your answer is, or don't say something silly. But that's what all clubs do all the time with interviews anyway, regardless of the situation.
Yeah, I found this surprising. I found it surprising you'd put it in writing. I found it – I mean, the one possible explanation is that here in the Premier League, we've got managers who are, you know, they're bigger than clubs, right? Or there really is the cult of the manager, much more so than in other countries. And maybe they fear that if a guy like Mourinho or Pep or Klopp gets in front of the camera, he's just going to answer a question honestly – based on how he feels, rather than the party business line. And maybe after, you know, 5 weeks in quarantine, Klopp's going to say, yeah, okay, enough of this. Let me tell you what I really think. Or Mourinho's going to be like, hey, this is all stupid. This is what I think. I mean, that's the only reason I would imagine that you could do this.
And it's not easy. And it's a good thing, I think, that the Premier League is trying to give content to those broadcasters and the right holders, because, again, there's other leagues where no one is talking. And I think this is a good service, and they do it in normal times as well, where they've got players up and managers and all of that for even for international broadcasters. So this is not the problem here. It's the problem is like, it's a good thing to give people out and content, maybe not try to control it too much.
Yeah, I think reality here is that we really are no further forward. You just have to react to the pandemic. But so far, it's not been a great couple weeks PR-wise, no. I think, for the Premier League or for the players.
What do you make of the option reported again, I think, this morning about Wembley being available to maybe to finish the Premier League? So you'll have a few games per day. You'll have all the teams playing there. Somehow, maybe they would stay at St. George's Park and travel there for games and then back to St. George's Park where they could all fit maybe, or some teams, something like that. Obviously, after 3 full days of rain, you could just expect imagine the pitch at Wembley for the third game at 8 p.m. under the rain. It wouldn't be pretty, right?
Yeah, look, playing these games at Wembley, I'm not a stadium logistics expert. I would have thought that opening up a 96,000-seat stadium, even when you're just going to have a couple hundred people there, will cost you more money than doing it at a much smaller stadium, right? I mean, your main priority is going to be the TV cameras or whatever, but surely there's smaller grounds where you can do that. Yeah. If your concern is about travel or maybe they feel, why not do it at the Emirates, right? That seems a lot more logical, much more hotel capacity nearby or whatever. I don't know. This Wembley thing seems to me is like the FA saying, oh no, we're losing so much money. Hey, why don't we put Wembley forward and maybe we can claw a little bit of that back? I honestly don't know. But it just, a lot of this just seems nonsensical at this juncture. But hey, look, Germany's leading the way in many ways. So shall we get our buddy Jan on to talk about that?
Yeah, let's get him on. He's been a long time as well. So let's welcome him back.
Jan Agafjorchov joining us here to talk a little bit of Bundesliga. But first, Jan, I need to know, because obviously you're a former professional athlete. You stay very fit. Now, is it true that you have sort of some underground government-subsidized health and fitness bunker, which includes a cryotherapy chamber, a lap pool, and all sorts of mega high-tech equipment, including clearly a beautician studio as well?
Yeah.
Not only that, I'm in very close connection with the Norwegian government, make sure that I can train as a former footballer. So in 5 years' time, when all this is over, I'll be one of the best in a charity game.
Okay, but sorry, just tell us, because it's April right now in Europe, and the only times I've been to Norway, it was really, really cold, but then it was also winter. I mean, I'm assuming you can go outside. What did you go outside and like jump into lakes to, because it invigorates you and stuff like that? Or is that how it works? Or,
well, first of all, I mean, through this corona time that we in Norway, when our prime minister, the 12th of March, told us about the different isolation, lockdown kind of thing, we had a fantastic weather. So, I mean, that has helped us a bit. So my plan is every morning, you have two alternatives, I guess, in these times, is to be in the fridge, find your chocolate and just eat till you die. Or you can do as I do. I train a lot. I got a son who plays professionally in Scotland. We got him home. And so he is my kind of personal coach. But I'm also doing my running in the morning with two mates of mine, and which is also good in this time, training not only to lose weight, but also, I mean, to have this Sigmund Freud kind of thing to get things off your mind. So I would recommend everybody to train during this time, because if we don't train, I mean, this is so depressing.
No, I think that's true. It also obviously lifts your mood. It's difficult to do depending where you are, if you have outside space or you don't. But there's one question that I've asked. I love asking people who were professional footballers and whose kids are also professional footballers. Now, can I ask, Jan, how old are you now?
I'm 53.
And how old is your son?
He's 26.
Okay. So at what age... So presumably you were already retired by the time he started playing professionally. At what age did your son become better than you?
Well, it's a good point.
Because I'm assuming you had kickabouts and stuff like that. So yeah. When he's 15, 16, right, you would have been 45?
Yeah.
Was that about there? Or?
Well, it's as we talk now, I remember this game we had in, we were in California on holiday, and I think that is the last time I beat him. Then he was 15 or 16, and he's still depressed about that. But having said that, I mean, I always used my own experience till my son. So when my son will go into professional football, I always wanted him to make his education. So that's why he was in North Carolina Duke for 4 years. And now it's up to him. He wants to travel the world. Fantastic. But at the same time, I'm one of those parents who nearly said to my son, please just follow your education now. And, and I'm a former professional. So I guess. But he beat me FIFA when he was 5, so I haven't played that for 48 years.
That's how you said, of course, a former Blue Devil as well.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Okay, so I got to ask about this because obviously you follow the Bundesliga very closely. And it seems that maybe it was a very typical German reaction, but as Jules and I talked about the Premier League earlier, as every league seems to have different, every company seems to have different levels of chaos about when are we coming back, how are we coming back. Germany, and I know they're kind of playing to stereotypes, they seem to have very clear plans. Seifert seems very, very confident. You know, he's saying May 6th or May 9th or May 16th, and we'll do this, it'll be kind of closed doors. There will be 240 people at every game. He's counted them. What do you make of this? Is this... I guess it's a normal German characteristic, right? I mean, I speak to you as a guy who's a foreigner in Germany, but I've lived there a long time or spent a lot of time there.
Well, it's an interesting question. It's an interesting topic. And the last week, I've talked with a lot of the key figures in German football. But remember, when we are having all this discussion of when football is going to start, there are two parties that are not on the table. That's the government and the virus. And I think that we don't know the virus yet, but I think it also that the Germans have been good at defining the German Bundesliga as a big part of the society. There are 56,000 people who are employed directly or indirectly to football. Well, I went to the PSG Dortmund game. I was one of the few journalists who did that game. We saw inside there were 400-500 people who were involved in the game. Even if it was closed doors, there were 5,000 people outside. And you have to ask yourself, what will happen to all these people if Dortmund and Schalke will play at closed doors? These 80,000 Dortmund fans, where will they be? Where will they stay? On other one hand, it's good for the society because where we know when football starts rolling again, I could say sport, but we're talking about the biggest now football, people got something else to talk about. I think that we're going into a stage now when the people of the world need to have some hope that someday we will have a brighter time. So maybe football will be a symbol of that. Having said that, I mean, they're speaking about players who are going to be tested for corona every third day. And when we see a lot of the population of this world are not able to be tested at all because it's too expensive, it's too hard to organize, football should watch out that we don't take ourselves out of the society. What about the ambulance? What about the security? What about the NHS people of Germany? Are they supposed to be in stadium instead of saving the grandmothers or the grandfathers? So I think this is a moral kind of question. But I think that the main thing for football is that we could be the symbol of a society functioning again. And 9th of May, it sounds optimistic, but like you're saying, the Germans, I know there are talks that we don't know so much about between the governments and the German Bundesliga. And then we'll have to see if the football is solidarity, if they have that solidarity. I spoke to a Bundesliga coach yesterday, and he said to me, but Jan, this and that club, and I won't say the name of that club, they are training 11 against 11. They are playing friendlies. We are doing 5 and 5 and 5. So we'll just have to see now the next coming weeks how far this solidarity will go.
Just the fact that they've been allowed to train again in a way or another, having groups of three, groups of four, like you said, maybe some do 11v11. Even the fact that they were allowed to do that shows that prior to that, they've been all very disciplined to keep that pandemic as low as it could compared to other countries in Europe or even in the US where things have got really out of hands. And the way they're preparing this is obviously very efficient, very German, very disciplined. Even for referees, they were saying we can test them before the game, after the game. They might even have a protection for their face during the game, that kind of stuff. They've thought about it very, very quickly compared to even the Premier League where it's a complete mess.
I think you're right, but I think the German Bundesliga is a mirror of the German society. I'm very happy how Norway has done it. We see that Denmark has done it more or less like we have done it, and Finland and Germany, of course. So I think for us Norwegians and for the Germans, I mean, the time that we even discuss football now with death tolls in UK and USA, it just shows you how far this has gone. But like you were saying, the Germans are good organized, but they're not too organized. So they will say that it's a moral thing that Angela Merkel will say, I know your grandmother maybe die tomorrow with lack of doctors, but we will send those kind of doctors into the stadium to take care of some paid footballers. So I think it's always this balance. It's always this balance that we have. Somehow the society gonna go start all over again, and I guess football could be based on all the requirements from instructions from our governments. We have to start somehow again.
I guess there's also a broader issue. Obviously, Germany is one of the wealthiest countries in the world. They have, you know, everything by every metric from ICU capacity. I know already they're taking COVID-19 patients from other countries, curing them in their hospital while they're still dealing with it. You know, it may just be a question of sheer resources, right? I think Seifert said very clearly that, yes, there will have to be more testing on players and people in stadiums, but, you know, we will make sure that not a single doctor or nurse who needs a test is not going to have it because it's, you know, it's going to Martin Hinteregger instead, you know. But I wanted to, there's one thing here that's not super clear to me, right? Seifert also says that, well, 50% of the Bundesliga 2 clubs are in danger of going bankrupt if we don't do this. Now, this is also because I'm guessing the television rights holders in the Bundesliga haven't paid their final installment yet. Two things here. One is, do you believe Seifert when he says that in Germany, with all the controls and the German precisions, there's 50% of the Bundesliga 2 clubs, so 9 clubs, that are just going to go bust just like that because they don't get their last installment of Bundesliga 2 TV money? Do you believe that?
Well, yes, I can't see there is any reason why you would kind of tell lies about it. But because I think that although every part of our society, sometimes you get a feeling, suspect they're overdoing it now to get packages from the governments. And I'm saying this in a positive way because this is depression for travel, tourism, traveling airplanes and whatever. But we should remember that some of these clubs, they are very dependent on big German companies. And I read some figures about Volkswagen, how much they are losing every day. And a time that you're going to kick out a lot of employees, you can't say that the next moment we're going to put 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 million euros into a football club because that is not accepted in the society, so they won't do that. So I think that the indirect kind of consequences are much bigger than the directly thing. But what I am afraid of is that, okay, let's say we go into recession in our economy and our society, but I'm very worried that we are going into a depression, because the depression in our society, that could have a longer consequences. A recession, we can somehow find an economic kind of financial way to get out of. But I'm so afraid that the depression can kind of kill off our society. Having said that, I think that is also the main challenge or the main positive thing for football. Because if you get the football going, if people can talk about Bayern, if they can talk about Salihamidzic, or they can talk about Flick getting a new contract, maybe they then will stop being like in my country. We used to have 5 million experts on football. Now we have 5 million experts on virus. So maybe we can go back to that normal life again.
Yeah, not just Norway there. One point I wanted to make, obviously, if it comes back, it's going to be behind closed doors. It's going to be, you know, effectively a big TV show. This is my own personal view. If they can get it all done by June 30th, and that seems to be Germany's or Seifert's plan to finish by June 30th, then it's not going to be an issue. Once you go past June 30th, and I'm wondering, particularly for the smaller clubs, yeah, they'll get this TV money, but they won't get gate receipts because obviously there's nobody there. If I'm a mid-table Bundesliga team with nothing to play for, do I really want to go past June 30th and then have to take on another month's wages, maybe more? Because obviously FIFA have said that, you know, they're not going to stand in the way if people want to extend contracts beyond June 30th, but it's still a big expense. And so, and this is an issue that we have in England too, right? People say we have to finish the season even if it's July and August. Yeah, I know, but if I'm a mid-table club and I'm not getting money in from gate receipts and I get very little money from television, and now you're telling me, oh, these 10 dudes whose contracts were expiring or who were going to go back to their parent clubs, now I got to keep paying them as well to play in these matches which are freaking irrelevant in front of empty stadiums. Does that make sense?
Well, I think that the best analyze now is that nobody has an idea what will happen. I think that is the main thing. And I think football, Germany, and then later English football, and then UEFA and FIFA, who tend to think that they decide anything in football, which they don't. They can talk about throw-ins, how you do throw-ins. But we know that the big clubs and the big leagues and the TV companies will kind of pressure them to say, well, we saw that with different decisions. But I think that we don't know. I think that the wise decision was to say that the 1920 season will be finished before we start the 2021 season. I think that is a good start. Okay, so we have that. Do I think that football without a crowd is good? Is good entertainment? No, it's boring. But and I think if it starts again, we will still think that is the most fantastic football we've ever seen, because now we are so hungry after seeing live football. I mean, people are betting and talking about the football in Belarus at the moment. So I think that we'll see that. But you have a good point. I think the consequences of this with new transfer windows, contracts that are expiring, TV money that are in waiting, I don't think we can have an opinion on that, but I don't think we've seen the consequences. How good will the leagues have a cooperation with the kind of the players' organization? I don't think the players will know either. The big players and the big name players, they won't have a problem because they will have been in demand. But I mean, the average player, they could fear that they will be out contract, will be out jobs, that squads of 30 could go down to 20 and the big clubs from 40 on loan. So I don't think we know the consequences. What we have learned, and I agree on that, is that I was a very happy and proud national player for Norway. But at the moment, no, we just have to wait a bit with the national games because the qualification we can do in the autumn. But so I think that the DNA of football is the league. So we have to find a way to end who is the champion, who will be relegated, who will go into Europe and so on. I think we have to find a way. But do I know the solution? No, I have no idea.
If we come back to football for a little bit, there have been new deals for Hansi Flick, Bayern, for Thomas Müller, and I think you, like us, you agree that it was a no-brainer. What about the situation for Neuer? What do you think will happen there? Because he hasn't renewed yet his contract that finishes in 2021. Nobody's coming in the summer. What do you think will happen there?
Well, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because we criticize Bayern for not taking care of all the talent in Germany. I mean, you know, some talents. If Bayern gonna be chasing for the Champions League trophy, as the paradox is, they could have done this year if we end the season. But they haven't been good at that the last years, because Uli Hoeneß, Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, they're always ending up saying that these players are not good enough for Bayern. Then they take Nübel from the Schalke goalkeeper, and everybody said that's the wrong decision too, but he's the most talented player, a keeper now in German football. Do I think that Neuer will sign? Yeah, I think he will, and I think that now it's all about the timing on it, and that they have promised Nübel X number of games every season, which sounds like bad leadership, because you can't tell one of the best goalkeepers in the world that you won't play all games. And I think it's for Neuer also a bad time now to have that contract situation not solved. Okay, he's got another year, but still there is not many clubs who will now go for a big goalkeepers in this summer, so he can't use that card. Not even Manchester United, who every club in Europe use to tempt player to sign their contracts, can do that now.
Yeah, I take your point on Neuer, but equally, he's maybe not the goalkeeper that he was, you know, after his injury, and maybe he'll get back there. But if you just stay there for a season, you go into training camp with Nübel, and, you know, you show that you're better than Nübel, 2021, you're a free agent. You can go off and sign whatever, wherever you want, you know, within reason. It's a strong position to be in for him. Whereas if you sign a longer-term contract, this is Bayern. They have more. They have a ton of money. They think Nübel is better. They'll play Nübel, and then you could become a prisoner to your contract.
Well, I think there is no way that in the next couple of years that Nübel will be better than Neuer. I mean, I could agree with you that Neuer is maybe not as good, because remember, Neuer, he kind of revolutionized football in the way he played as a goalkeeper. But I think that the main thing is that Manuel Neuer is desperate to stay in Bayern. I mean, he loves it there. It's a great club. That is his club. He loves to be German. He is German. And when you have a look around, Barcelona, Ter Stegen, De Gea, Manchester United, Alisson in Liverpool, there are not many spaces available. So he knows that he is just one of the best club in Europe. He knows that he will get a load of money signing there. So I think now it's just a gamble. Manuel Neuer will stay at Bayern.
Yeah, and I think I'm too much of a romantic, because what I would have wanted to see is Neuer run down his contract until 2021, go back to Schalke, make peace with the fans, and say, you know what, I behaved like Judas all these years ago, now I am back, now I will
forgive
be your servant, I am one of you, I've made all the money, I've won everything I need to win, now let's go and make Schalke great again.
And he wins
How
the league
cool
with
Schalke.
I'm always suspicious when someone tell me make something great again. And I'm always worrying for the years ahead. But I think, yeah, it's a romantic kind of thing that he will go back to Schalke. But remember, Manuel Neuer is now a Bayern. He is a Bayern kind of guy. And Schalke, yeah, I love Schalke. I love Dortmund. Great football area if you take all Bochum, Düsseldorf and everything now. So I don't think he will go back to Schalke. Manuel Neuer is at that point. He's won the Champions League. He's won the World Cup. That makes you... I mean, some players could... I asked once Lothar Matthäus after... I said, after you won the World Cup in 1990, when you came back to your first training session, how was your motivation? And he just looked at me. He thought that was the silliest question he ever heard in his life. I mean, these winners, they are so prepared. They are so eager to win. And for Manuel Neuer now, the last 3-4 years of his career is all about collecting trophies. And unfortunately, Schalke is not in that position right now.
Not yet. Jan, we have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us. And please be safe out there.
Cheers. Same to you guys. And a pleasure to be on. Thanks, boys.
Jules, it was great to hear from Jan there. But you know what? It's not going to be anywhere near as good as the Alphabet 11 G team. Oh, yes. That's right.
Oh, yes.
Their favorite letter of the alphabet.
Yes, because I did say on Thursday's pod that I thought it might get a bit tricky with the G, just thinking, you know, G is an unusual letter, I guess.
Please, but actually,
there's so many. And thank you again for all the people who send their teams. We get more and more every week. And I guess this one being a letter with a lot of, options and possibilities and stuff like that. So before we hear yours and ours, before we hear the full, there's I think two or three full women teams. There's one of all Gomez and Gomez. There's one on full MLS as well. There's people are getting really creative with this, so it's brilliant. Let's give you a few. Let's start here. I've got Danny Ackland, who has a 4-3-3 formation. Gulashi from RB Leipzig in goal. Gomez, Ginter, Gabriel, the Lille centre back, and Gusens at the back. Gundogan, Goretzka, Golovin in midfield, which is pretty decent. Gnabry, Griezmann, and Mario Gomez. I like the Mario Gomez up front. Well done, Danny.
Mario Gomez, wow.
Yeah. We have Kim Are, who sends Golini in goal, which I think you will like. Gilbert from Aston Villa, Jimenez, Gomez at centre back, Guerrero at left back, Goretzka, Gundogan, Grealish in midfield, and then Gnabry, Griezmann, and Gamero up front. William Cavalli, he sends no big Griezmann guy. Sorry, Jules. So just for you, William, I'm not going to read your team out. Sorry, too bad. Habib has a 3-5-2, Gulashi, Gnagnon from Sevilla on loan at Rennes, Godin, Jimenez, Gonul, Gusens, Ganagé, Bruno Guimaraes from Lyon, Billy Gilmore from Chelsea. I thought you'd like that one. Papu Gomez and Mason Greenwood. That's a pretty cool one, I think.
You've
really
got to
cool.
have your Papu in there. And yes,
you have to have your Papu. What about Paul Russell? He's got Golini, Guerrero, Ginter, Jimenez, Gomez, Gundogan, Gomez from Everton, Griezmann, Mario Götze, Gonzalo Guedes, and Gabbiadini up front. I thought you would like.
Manolo!
Manolo. Mike Courtney has a Gnabry, Griezmann, Papu Gomez front three with Grealish just behind, which is pretty good. Derek, you know your football, Derek Sekula, he's got Giroud up front with Griezmann and Papu Gomez as a number 10 in behind. Well done. Let's look into the women's team. Mikel Galan, our friend Miguel, who could be in the G team, Galan. He's got Lola Gallardo in goal, the Spanish goalkeeper. Then Julia Gwynn, Gamma, Glass and Alex Greenwood, the back four. Jackie Groenen from the Netherlands. Sarah Gunnarsdóttir from Wolfsburg and Iceland. And Patry, the Spanish midfielder. And then the front three, Caroline Graham, Valérie Govin, the French girl, and Lucia Garcia. So pretty strong team as well. What about the Sophie's team?
All right, Sophie Lawson. Now, Sophie went above and beyond because she actually did all this. Because she's got some Icelandic players in there. She has all the umlauts and the weird Icelandic D and stuff like that, which I'm sure Galán is not. But she went for Gudbjörg Gunnarsdóttir in goal, Alia Guagni, Stephanie van der Gracht, Sara Gama, the captain of the Italian women's team. Hello. And Hannah Glass at the back. Midfield, we've got Jackie Grunen. Of course, she also has Sara Gunnarsdóttir, but she also has her middle name, which is, do you know?
Bjork,
of course. He's Icelandic. What else is it going to be? And, of course, Patti Guijarro and Julia Gwynn as well, who was not familiar with. Up front, Lucia Garcia and, of course, a talented Italian striker, Cristiana Girelli.
So a big shout as well to Rohan Ramchandani, who always sends his team, but who has the ultimate Gomez and Gomez team. Aurelio Gomez in goal. Victor Gomez, Joe Gomez, Sergi Gomez and Elias Gomez at the back. Ibai, Sergio, Andre Gomez and Moy Gomez in midfield. Alejandro Gomez.
Papu.
That's Papu. And then Maxi Gomez up front. So well done to you for your full Gomez and Gomez team. What about yours, Gab?
That is impressive. Now mine, obviously in goal, I've gone with Golini, who is not just a talented goalkeeper, but a very talented rapper going... check it out. He's known as Il Rapper coi guanti, the rapper with gloves on. Not those kinds of gloves, Jules. At the back, I went with a back four, Mario Gaspar, of course, at right back. My left back had to be Robin Gusens, who's Golini's teammate at Atalanta. In the middle, Diego Godin and Camel Glick, just because
often
overlooked.
Oh, my
God. Yeah, showing Monaco some love there.
Like 55.
In midfield, I went with Gay as well. Gundogan, and then I went a little bit old school. Raul Garcia.
Now, oh, nice.
Remember Raul Garcia in his Atletico days when, you know, he would basically stink, but then he'd usually score a header? I still not going to say going strong, but still going at 33. Up front, no argument. Papu Gomez, Antoine Griezmann up front. And then for the third, I had Serge Gnabry, but then I realized, wait, I have too many Germans in my team. Because of course I already had two of them. That is a lot, right?
Yeah.
So instead I'm going to go with the legend that is Gervinho.
Oh my God. Brilliant, Gervinho. Good. That's a good team. I like your team. My team, I've got Gaeta in goal, Joe Gomez at right back, because I wanted him in the team, but I also wanted Godin and Jimenez at center backs, and Rafael Guerrero at left back. I've got the Gay brothers, but they're not really brothers, but Idrissa Gay from PSG, and Pape Gay, the wonder kid at Le Havre, who very soon is going to explode in one of the top clubs. And then I've got Griezmann as a number 10, and then my front three is Gnabry, Papu Gomez, and of course, Olivier Giroud. You cannot not have Olivier Giroud in a G team. I mean, he's the most handsome footballer there's ever been. And, you know, he's a World Cup winner. And I think as a manager, we both agree for Gasperini, right?
Yeah, much as I have my own issues with him, like, I got to doff my cap to Gasperini and give it to him. I'm with you on that.
On Thursday, though, I think he will get trickier with the letter H, right? We agree on that?
Oh, yes, the H team. I sense a bit of Halstenberg coming up, but beyond that.
Interreger, yeah, there might be a few Germans again, but you know.
Has Steve Harper retired? Or he's one of those guys you imagine hanging around as like a third.
He deserves to be there in the National League or somewhere and can still be in the team.
Exactly. All right, enough of this nonsense, Jules. How about your favorite part of the show?
Yes, that's right.
It's what we call quick hits. Now, we hate to pick on Barcelona here, but another six directors resigned in protest against Bartomeu. And this weird story about i3 Ventures won't go away. Remind us again, who are they and what were they doing?
Well, from what it seems like, and again, the club and i3 Ventures are denying it, but it looks like
Bartomeu. They're investigating it, though. The club are investigating it.
It seems
while also denying it. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. But it seems that Barcelona paid i3 Ventures to create social media accounts pretty much everywhere on every platform to say bad things about some of the players, some of the staff, some of the people at the club, but not Bartomeu. And actually, the other hand for Bartomeu and just saying how amazing Bartomeu was. That's not the only problem as well, because that's already in itself is pretty bad. But also that for what looks like a service that you usually get billed for 100,000, maybe 200,000 euros, they actually paid 900,000 euros. So they even overpaid for that kind of stuff that was not very legal in the first place anyway. So someone
And there's said, another element to this, which is all their invoices, like there's a certain threshold above which the invoices get audited internally. And then there's a, you know, below that it's considered like petty cash. They always invoiced just beneath that threshold so that people couldn't go and people wouldn't notice that i3 Ventures exists.
It's dodgy. But such a big club, self-destructing like this, you know, in a time as well when there's no game, so everybody can just look, you know, if there was a lot of games happening and Barca were winning and Messi was amazing, they could just hide that kind of things, or it would go maybe a bit less noticed or more unnoticed. But right now, that's all we can talk about. So everybody's so focused on them. It's a disaster.
Well, and it goes further, of course, because you also have the, you know, the Messi situation, which was covered with his statement. And also, this is really serious and has legal implications, but one of the directors who resigned, giving an interview at the weekend, and he's saying like, oh, somebody at Barcelona has their hand in the till. I don't know who it is. Now, Barcelona, of course, naturally have designed this. They're exploring legal options. But, you know, to have a guy who's so close to the president come out and make these sorts of accusations, did you feel a little bit sorry for Bartomeu?
Yeah, I do. I think it's ugly. And for such a great club, it's just, it reflects so badly. It's just, and it was probably so much avoidable. I know there's the elections coming, whether they're this summer, the following summer, whenever. And it's like an electoral campaign. It's always a bit feisty. But that's bad. That's so bad on every level. Right, the Swiss Attorney General announced that it was dropping its case against Sepp Blatter for underselling World Cup rights in the Caribbean. Gab, does this rehabilitate the former FIFA president?
Well, no, because of course he's already been judged and banned by the FIFA Ethics Committee, and because he has another legal case. The odd thing here, I mean, this is for those who didn't follow, this is one specific thing that came out. It was part of the DOJ case in 2015, where he sold the rights, the World Cup rights to the Caribbean, to a company that, you know, was connected to Jack Warner, for a lot less than they were worth, and then Jack Warner then resold them on, and or the company resold them on and profited from them, which is a charge Blatter's always denied. What's weird about this is these charges were 5 years ago. It's been reportedly the prosecutor never actually sat down and interviewed Blatter. It's not like there's going to be any new documents or – so it's like, why bring these charges in the first place if you're not going to go through to prosecute? You know, normally when you charge somebody, you've already built your case and they defend themselves. This is a bit of a sham. There was some suggestion that they went ahead and charged Blatter because they wanted to please the DOJ, knowing that they could never bring a case against him. But if you remember back in 2015 – this was around the time that the U.S. State Department and DOJ were going after sort of Swiss secrecy laws and banking and stuff like that. Could this have been some kind of quid pro quo? I don't know. But tell you what, Sepp, you're not off the hook. Nowhere, nowhere close to that.
Not yet.
All right, Jules, we worked it out. Jadon Sancho is definitely joining Manchester United, right?
Of course he is, and you know why. You know how we found out. It was all revealed last night in a live Instagram chat when someone, you know how that works. You're talking and people send their messages or their questions and you can see them on your screen and you can answer or not and you can do whatever you want. And someone says, sip some water if you're joining United. And what did Jadon Sancho do? He obviously took a bottle when he saw the message and drank a bit of it. And then since then, everybody is drawn conclusion that he was going. Obviously, you know, this is a joke. You know, he might be joining United and United will certainly do a lot of work. I don't think he's done already, obviously, but I think it's a very big possibility that he will end up at Old Trafford in the summer whenever the transfer window opens.
Yeah. We don't really know what was in that bottle, do we? So it might not have
exactly.
Been water.
Yeah, you can always deny and say, no, I didn't drink one. Well, Rubinho, the man responsible for the football leaks, has been released from prison and is now under house arrest. Gab, why is this significant? And will he release the passwords for the 10 encrypted hard drives the cops seized at his secret hideaway in Budapest when he was on the run?
I have no idea what he's going to do. I have no idea what's on those hard drives, whether there's more information, whether it's the same information as before.
You think that he would have kept some stuff, right? He hasn't released everything.
Maybe he hid it somewhere. Maybe it's in the cloud. I don't know. But for those who don't know, just a quick reminder on the Football League story, because it's been tremendous. This guy came out originally. He said that he didn't hack the information. He said it was given to him. But this is all information that so many of those big stories that we've had, they've had a huge impact on football, from the Cristiano Ronaldo sexual assault and rape charge to the reason Manchester City are under investigation again and have been banned, you know, pending the CAS appeal, to all sorts of details about people's contracts. He's responsible for all of this. He was the conduit that got all of this out into the public sphere. He also, and it's not just football, the richest woman in Africa, who's from Angola, he released information on her about tax evasion. She's not being prosecuted. There's a whole bunch of things going on. What's interesting is some people say that he's a whistleblower and he's a hero, and he should be afforded whistleblower protection. Others say, well, hang on a minute, he's a hacker. He's somebody who hacked this information. Now, there may be a public interest to this, although it should be pointed out that, you know, a lot of the stuff that he's released is stuff which hasn't led to prosecutions, or, you know, a lot of it is just private information. It's a lot of very generic information in the stuff that he releases. So it's an interesting case. I would assume that everybody would be well served to increase their security. And obviously, like in those movies, the dude doesn't have access to Wi-Fi. He doesn't have access to a phone. I don't even think he has a microwave in his apartment because they're so terrified about what this guy can do. Now, Jules, it's been less than 4 years since the cuddly Frank McCourt, former owner of the LA Dodgers, bought Marseille. Are they really up for sale now, and why?
Well, it's something that we've been hearing for the last few weeks, few months now, that Frank McCourt, who bought it, if you remember, for what, just over £40 million, which was, I always thought quite cheap for a club like Marseille.
He bought it from Julia Louise Dreyfus, right?
Yes, exactly.
And former Seinfeld actress.
Yeah, and he invested a lot of money. And McCourt, the problem is that maybe the results were not what he expected, especially in terms of qualifying for the Champions League every year, or even winning trophies, which they haven't done either.
And they got in trouble with financial fair play as well, didn't they?
Yeah, because they're in debt, because they've given contracts to people like Dimitri Payet worth around 300,000 a week and stuff like that, which is crazy. You know, a bit less than that, but that, those kind of enormous salaries when you don't actually have the revenues coming in to afford them, really. So the club has debts now, and I think McCourt has had enough and probably wants to go. He will, I'm sure, listen to offers and whoever has to offer something for the club and then maybe take a decision. But I think you could expect it not to be anytime soon. And also the club will have to sell some of the best players in the summer in the transfer window, because right now the accounts is looking pretty bad.
Doesn't seem like a great time to put an asset like that up for sale, even one that you paid very little for.
Yeah, definitely. The Italian FA said that if the lockdown is eased, they will start testing players at the beginning of May with a view towards starting up again in early June and finishing up the season in July. Gav, is this realistic?
Maybe realistic. I think it's stupid.
Do you think it's too early?
No, I'm not a doctor. I don't know about that. I think everything should be wrapped up by June 30th, and I don't see the point in playing behind closed doors after that date and forcing clubs to extend contract and to play games when, you know, I feel like a lot of this stuff isn't necessarily going to be relevant and costs are going to ramp up. For now, the lockdown is scheduled to end on May 3rd. Obviously, they're going to review that if necessary. But they're under a lot of pressure to play. But then there's also other clubs who are saying, no, screw that. We don't want to play. The main problem is that Italy have a diabolically stupid and slow legal system. And they imagine there's going to be a whole bunch of lawsuits. And the problem in Italy is, and I'm thinking in some ways it's been even worse than England, you've got clubs that are purely looking after their own interests. Oh, look, I'm in the relegation zone. Okay, fine. Then I'm not going to play again this season, come what may. And then I'll see
that
in court.
Brescia, no? Brescia announced that he didn't want to finish this season.
The guy is a whole freaking tool shed, Massimo Cellino, right? He's so nakedly transparent. And, not a good situation to be in. Now, on a melancholy note, the legendary England goalkeeper and Chelsea goalkeeper, Peter Zaccat Bonetti, has passed away. Jules, his peak was before my time, and therefore definitely before yours. But he was a huge figure in the English game, right?
Yeah, he was. He was part of the 1966 squad that won the World Cup, although he didn't play a second. But he was...
And 1970 as well, no?
Yeah, 1970 as well. I think he only got like 7 or 8 caps or something. But legendary Chelsea goalkeeper, played there between 1960 and 75, and then again 76 to 79. Small by the size, I think he was just 1 meter 78 or 79. But incredible reflexes, great on his line as well. Great guy for all accounts, although I never met him. But yeah, sad day and a big loss for Chelsea and for English football.
It is weird when you think back to those days. I know it's not a very original thought, but like, you look at all the issues England have had with their goalkeepers over the years. Like, if I was to ask you, who's the last outstanding English goalkeeper that you can remember? It's probably sometime back in your childhood. And back then they had Peter Bonetti, Ray Clements, and of course Gordon Banks. That's pretty remarkable.
It's those things where you have a generation that year, those years. Just incredible.
Yeah, then you've got 30 years of David freaking Seaman throwing it into his own net. Come on.
And Joe Hart, right. Sir Kenny Dalglish, I should say, has tested positive for coronavirus and was admitted to hospital, though he's currently asymptomatic. Gab, your thoughts?
I'm just glad he's in hospital. I've had the privilege to not just to meet him, but to spend some time with him. I wasn't a Liverpool fan, but he was obviously a hero of my childhood. I caught the tail end of his career. I'm always struck by how, you know, certain great players, when you see them many years after, you know, some of them look like normal people and some of them still retain that glow about them, that sort of twinkle. And he still has that to his day. So all I can hope is I'm glad he's asymptomatic. I'm glad, yeah. You know, if they decided to bring him in, I'm sure there's a good reason. I hope he's looked after well, and I want to see him back very soon. Ooh, Dele Alli celebrated his birthday over the weekend. Jules, I bet it was a raucous affair. In fact, I think they're going to make The Hangover 4 will be based on Dele Alli's birthday weekend.
Crazy, crazy party, crazy, wild scenes, really, at Dele Alli's mansion. Not far from where I live, actually, just up the road. No, he was obviously in self-isolation, like all of us. His cake was a PlayStation control as a cake with the candles. There was a few people with him, so I'm sure they're the people he self-isolate with and has done since
Who
the start
they?
Of.
Is it his entourage?
I don't know. You could only see legs on the photo. You see legs and socks, and that's all. So I just assumed that they were not guests who came over for the day. But yeah, 24, turning 24, Dele Alli, and you know
he played Twister. He played Pin the Tail on a Donkey, right?
Yeah, on his own. Yeah, maybe he had like a piñata. You know, the thing that you just smash and then all the sweets fall down.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sure he had one of those. So happy birthday, Dele. And sorry we couldn't make it to your party. But if you rearrange your party after all of this is over, Gab and I will be there, of course. Don't worry.
Actually, can I ask you, if he rung you up and he said, Jules, you live around the corner, will you come and self-isolate with me and get your family and stuff? And you can still do the Gab and Jules podcast from my place. But I just, you know, I need somebody to hang out with.
I need the self-distancing. The social distancing is very important to me. My mind can't function if I feel in danger or something like that.
So no, but if you would have self-isolated for a whole month with Dele Alli.
Oh, so at the start, you mean? Not now,
yes.
At the start. Oh, at the start.
Okay, would you have felt like a third wheel?
Oh, can I bring the whole Lawrence's family with me? Or is it just me? Because, I mean, he wouldn't want all of us at his house because that would be carnage, the three kids and the wife and all of that. But, yeah, I mean, we would have played a lot of FIFA, you know, played in the garden, I guess, and stuff. Well, you know.
All right. I'd like to imagine that, you know, given I think there's some Arsenal fans in your family, you might have become a bit mischievous there.
Well, there's probably other people, though, I would choose ahead of Dele Alli to spend my self-isolation with. Right, enough of Dele Alli. Gab, your hometown, Milan, has, of course, been hit hard by the pandemic, but that didn't stop Milan, AC Milan, that is, and Inter Milan, from squaring off in the derby this past weekend. What happened? What derby?
That's right. They had a derby simulation on, I don't know which one of the gaming platforms it was, because I'm sure there's more than one. But they streamed the whole thing. They had Rafael Leão representing Milan. And, of course, your boy Esposito representing Inter.
And just by coincidence, the two youngest, or pretty much youngest members of the squad, right? Because the oldest one don't play FIFA. I'm not as good as the youngest one.
Well, you know, Ibrahimovic wasn't doing it because, as we saw from Instagram, he's out there fishing. There's a great picture.
Yeah.
He looks like freaking Henry Winkler holding a fish. Anyway, it finished 2-2. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Ibrahimovic got a late equalizer for Milan. So, but you know, an absurd amount of people tuned in to watch this. So,
good,
you know,
yeah.
Why not? Now, Paul Pogba, we haven't forgotten about you. Hey, I have an idea. Shall we ask you about whether his heart's in it at Manchester United and he's angling for a move? Or is that a tired, stupid question that I would never ask on this podcast unless the facts change? So instead of just How's he doing? Is he still injured?
No, he's not. He's back and he's coming back and he's been challenging Zlatan, by the way, doing some tricks and stuff in their house, in their own house. But he gave a little interview to the Manchester United official podcast, which they released at the weekend, and basically explaining the injuries and why it's been a blank season pretty much for him. Right now he's played only 8 games, and saying that he needed surgery on his ankle at the start of the season. And then when he came back, the bone in his ankle had actually grown and got bigger, which caused him a lot of pain. So he needed another surgery after he played on Boxing Day. And that's why we haven't been since. And he says that now he's feeling much better. There's no pain anymore. And as soon as training resumes, he'll be able to be back with the squads. And I think as soon as the league resumes as well, he'll be playing. Now, but he's been whether you like him or not, it can't have been easy for him. No, really. I know you're looking at me with like, it's true. It can't have been easy for him having all that time. People said, oh, but he doesn't want to be there. He doesn't want to play for him. That's not the point. The point is he wants to play football, whoever that is for, and he could not have played football this season. And that must be really hard to go through.
Now, Jules, not many people know this, but of course, you're a qualified orthopedic surgeon.
Yeah, of course I am.
Is it normal that you have surgery and then the bone starts growing while you're having surgery and then you have to have it again because the bone's too big to...
Well, I think it's a side effect. No, I think it's a side effect from the first surgery that created that, and maybe the way that operation was made or something, I would think. But the fact is, after that first surgery on an ankle, and you know, people like Marco van Basten had a lot of surgery on his ankle that cost him his career. The ankle is a very sensitive area.
Just hope he comes back healthy.
Yeah.
I have a good friend who actually is an orthopedic surgeon. And he made the point that if you had VAR for surgery, like, it would absolutely suck and they would have to take out so much insurance and it would be the worst thing in the world. No, just because so much that's involved is people making educated guesses and you get so many unexpected things. It's not a question of, you know, how talented a surgeon you are or an orthopod. It's just that there's so many variables.
And Gab, we've got another story on Harry Kane and the link with Manchester United on the website written by Rob Dawson, who's usually very well informed. Do you think it's a really realistic possibility that United will sign Harry Kane in the summer?
Well, in the summer while the Premier League is still going on?
Well, you know, when the transfer window opens at some point.
I mean, there were these stories, of course, this weekend, right? Putting a price on it. Was it 200 million or something stupid like that?
Or something, yeah.
But it's all paper talk. Obviously, Kane kind of opened the door a little bit when he answered that question, honestly, a couple weeks ago. I just don't know. If you're Manchester United, Harry Kane is going to turn 27. I think he's somebody you sign as a finishing touch to a team to put you over the top. Would simply adding Harry Kane to this group turn United into a title contender? I don't know. And for that kind of money, I will tell you, United, because of the money they have and because I think they're going to suffer less than a lot of other clubs, although everybody's suffering, they're in a position where they could go and cherry pick, you know, the top 22, 23, 24-year-olds in the world. So I like Harry Kane for United, but I like him at a certain number, and it's not the 200 million that Levy or Lewis might be talking about. It simply isn't. Plus, he's coming off an injury. He says he's fit again, but we don't know what condition he's in, right?
Yeah. No, that's right. I think it's a very good debate, and we will have that debate many times between now and whenever the transfer window opens. Will he go? Will he not go? I think it would be a great shot for United, whatever price they can get him. But they might have to choose. We might not be able to sign in the same transfer window. Jadon Sancho, another centre-back, Harry Kane. I mean, there's a point where you can't just spend £500 million in the summer, so they would have to make choices.
Of course, just a reminder, Harry Kane shares a birthday with Jacqueline Onassis and with me. One of the tough things about lockdown is the lack of opportunity to exercise and the temptation to go and visit the refrigerator and chow. Jules, there's one Real Madrid star has discussed his struggles quite openly.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Eden Hazard, I know you're listening to the pod. We love you, Gab and I, on the pod. And we're all in the same situation. It's hard for everyone not to eat when you're, you know, in the house all day long, and there's chocolate and there's biscuits and there's this barbecue. We could do all those kind of things.
I love how, like, because Eden Hazard is little, you assume that when he chows, he eats the kind of things that a child would eat, like chocolate.
Wait a minute, what would make him as fat as he was when he came back from holidays?
I don't know. The dude's Belgian. Like, he could be, the dude's Belgian. Yeah, yes, chips, he could be eating chips. Like mountains of moules and frites, or what do you call frites? With a mayo. And then he could be eating all those foie gras terrines that you get at your Belgian trattoria.
True.
Why ain't gotta be Kinder eggs and like ice cream?
No, but I'm just,
why are you making him seem like he's a child?
This could be part of it. Next time I'll ask him why he finds the hardest to resist to, and then I'll tell you. But this is a message for you, Eden, brother. We've all been there. We're all there right now with you. Keep the faith. Try to still do a bit of exercise outside, because otherwise you're going to come back like, you know, I don't know, like a bibendum.
Is that what you said? Yeah. Like the Michelin man, yes?
Yeah, like the Michelin man. So please, Eden, be careful. And I know it's hard. So he said on an interview to Belgian television that he found it really difficult not to eat too much. And we know, because we've seen you in after the summer, Eden, that, you know, you love your food like all of us. So just keep the faith and hopefully everything will be fine. Don't worry.
Eden, don't listen to these people. You come back. You're as big as a house. You'll still be the second most talented person at the club after your manager.
Well, and finally, Gab, reports out of Germany suggest we could have an emergency transfer window, so like a third window on top of the summer one and the January one, so clubs could offload players and raise money quickly. Is it a smart idea, or do you think it's a bit dumb?
I mean, it may end up being a necessary idea as leagues all come back at different times. You know, we may have, like, before they had transfer windows when players could come and go, especially here in England. I remember it was total chaos because you'd have, you know, one guy scoring for a club one weekend against another club and then joining that club. And in fact, we even had a manager. I think it was, was it George Graham who managed like Leeds one weekend and then went to Spurs, and then Leeds played Spurs that weekend and they went to Spurs. I mean, I guess like conflict of interest, governance, you know, these things have never been pretty big in England. I don't think you're going to offload players and raise money quickly. I just really don't think that that's going to happen, because there's going to be a massive cash crunch. But it's pretty obvious that clubs will need the flexibility to go and do that. At a minimum, I think registration windows are going to be lifted, because you're going to presumably have a bunch of out of contract players. Yeah. So look, this is the flexibility. FIFA said we're certainly not going to stand in the way. Y'all figure out what you need to do, and this is definitely a possibility that's on the table.
I've got a quiz question if you want it today, or we can keep it for Thursday, but this is a really good one.
No, let's chuck this out. Let's go. The insane response to the Darren Huckerby one.
Yes, who, by the way, let's try to get him on the show on Thursday. But this is a new one. This is a really, really good one. Listen up, people, carefully. Who am I? I've played for 3 English clubs and made various international appearances. I've played alongside Gareth Southgate, James Milner, Robbie Fowler, Eric Cantona, Ian Rush, and Stuart Pearce. Who am I?
And you've only played for 3 English clubs.
Yeah, I leave that out there. Only 3 English clubs, and I've been international player. I put it out there. I'm going to put it on Twitter for people to answer. We might give the answer on Thursday or maybe next week to give people more time. But yeah, this is a good one.
All right, Luis Saha. I'm just doing it because it's not Luis Saha, right?
It's not Luis Saha.
On that note, let's leave it there. Jules, it's been real. Let's do this again on Thursday.
Let's do that, and people stay safe. Don't forget.